Welcome to the program for Friday, November 30th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it is the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week on the Federal News Countdown, my experts choosing the stories are Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. It's great to see you as always.
Good to see you. Thanks for letting me come on the show.
Happy to have you. And, of course, you're probably not busy at all because there's nothing really going
right.
on in the Hill.
Congress is not doing anything.
Not up to anything. Well, we're looking forward to hearing the stories that you've selected this week. And Dan Mintz, who is the principal of ESEM Consulting and a former CIO at the Transportation Department. Good to see you, my friend.
Always glad to be here.
You are in high spirits because you're finally going to get some hockey back next week.
Yes, we was supposed to be only this one Hershey Bears versus the Norfolk Admirals in between the massive Washington Capitals hockey season. But that's the only game.
That's not happening. Well, I'll see you there. We're all going, the whole Rose family's going down for that game because we're Hershey Bears fans. Well, Caps fans too, but happy to see the Hershey Bears, and we'll see you over there. And we'll count down your stories on today's Federal News Countdown. We start, as we always do, with
number three.
Jenny, your third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is "Hearing on Veterans Affairs Conference Spending Turns Combative." There's two issues at play here, it seems to me. The chairman of the committee, Jeff Miller, says, "You're not responding to my inquiries." VA says, "We've responded to," and it's quoted in the article, how many inquiries VA says they've responded to. And I guess you could kind of argue the case from both sides. VA's responded a lot, but not necessarily to the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee.
Well, and I think that's some of the inherent tension. And as I look at some of the other things we'll probably talk about today, there is this inherent tension between Congress and the agencies and what's really going on. And with the VA conference spending, you know, there are some issues that the agency itself is dealing with in terms of looking into it and dealing with employees. But one of the other reasons I picked this, too, is because the conference spending, whether it was GSA or VA or a number of things, some of this, I think people hoped would die down after the elections. And certainly Congress is not slowing its oversight of these issues. And so I think this is indicative, and it's getting, in fact, more combative. This hearing ended not well in terms of, I guess, the perspective of Congress. And so I think we're going to see actually a lot more of this sort of oversight and scrutiny rather than having it slow down some.
My colleague Jason Miller said that Chairman Miller ended the hearing early, just said, I give up because I don't have the answers that I'm looking for. Corinne Brown, a Democrat on the committee, this GovExec story said the hearings have become excessive, calling the amount of time VA spent gathering and sending information to Congress rather than actually helping veterans ludicrous. Not everybody agrees with that assessment, but this is the same thing that I hear all the time about Homeland Security.
Right. And that's the issue. You're seeing it with several agencies. And, you know, I think at some point it's hard for agencies, and I'm sure other folks who have been in agencies can talk about this, too. But you're getting requests, but you are also doing the work. And one of the things that raised a flag with some of the groups I'm involved with, federal workforce groups, is that they started talking about the bureaucrats not doing what they were supposed to be doing for the veterans. And, you know, in terms of the broader anti-federal employee rhetoric that's been out there, this stuff isn't helpful in lumping all people. You know, sure, there might have been some things and there some alleged wrongdoing here, but it's part of this broader, let's look at federal employees and paint them all with this brush of not supporting veterans or not doing the agency mission.
The third most important federal news story of the week, from as chosen by Jenny Mattingly, is "Hearing on Veterans Affairs Conference Spending Turns Combative." It's from GovExec, and it's linked up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth right now. Dan Mintz, your number three story of the week is House Panel Chairman Pushes GSA Over Supply Schedules Proposal. The whole schedules situation, I mean, we're hearing it about GWACs when it comes to those kinds of contracts and schedules. There's a lot more oversight, it seems to me, pursuant to what Jenny and I were just talking about. A lot more oversight likely to happen in this realm, too, it seems to me. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah. The reason why this article was interesting to me, there are sort of the issues in the small and then sort of the issues in the large. In the small, it again shows that Congress wants to touch a lot of these administrative decisions. They nominally tried to cut down schedules because they tried to pick the ones that were not particularly active. and not used very much, and thought that it would save money overall to the government by doing that. But Congress wanted to check each of those. So in the small, that's the story. But there's the larger issue is this. There's a big problem with the government in terms of how they deal with small businesses. You tend to have, you know, real tiny businesses who, and a lot of them are in protected space, 8A or disadvantaged or veteran disabled owned. And then you have, of course, the big elephants that are very active, but there's nothing much in between. So the question is, how do you nurture these small businesses and allow them to participate? And that's one of the concerns that's going on there. And the other issue is that if you notice, again, taking the article at face value, if the GSA initially said that they thought they'd save 20-some million dollars by doing this, and then they said, well, maybe it's really less than that, and they said maybe closer to $6 million. So one of the problems with these schedules, and you alluded to this, is how effective are the schedules for the government? I mean, the purpose is to make it less expensive and more efficient, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of quantitative information that really justifies the usage well.
And I wonder if we're getting away from that idea that the schedules are there to help the government procure the lowest price, even if there are certain set-asides, because this makes a reference to the chairman of the Small Business Committee, Sam Graves. And the story says, Graves said GSA first said, as you just mentioned, it's expected to save $24 million, but later said savings would only amount to $6 million. If you're thinking just about the savings, then does it matter how much you save if you do actually save? Is that $18 million that they didn't save that they thought they were going to such a big deal? Because it sounds to me like what the chairman is saying is, well, if you only save $6 million, then you should have just kept these things that it doesn't sound like you really needed anyway.
So it may be that thematically the two articles have a common theme, and that is the rules, that is, why you're doing it was never well defined. In the case of the first article that we talked about, the question is, what's an appropriate expenditure for conferences? What would be a commercial expenditure? So what's the rule? Without that context, everything is a problem. Same thing here. If there are no metrics or no defined value that everyone has agreed to, then anyone can just poke at it. And that's not a good thing.
Well, and then the broader issue here, too, is at what level does it become appropriate for Congress really to be involved in managing a decision that an agency makes? And, or at what point do you say, you know what, we can't have our fingers in every single pot in the federal government, and so we're going to have to trust the people at the agencies to make those decisions. Dan Mintz's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is House Panel Chairman Pushes GSA Over Supply Schedules Proposal. You can read it and all of the stories in the countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll continue with this week's Federal News Countdown next.
The Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
It's open season for federal employees, so what should you consider when choosing a health care plan? The Office of Personnel Management says you should ask yourself these five important questions. How much does the plan cost? What benefits does it cover? What will be your out-of-pocket expenses? Which doctors can you use? And how well does your plan provide quality care? Find more tips at federalnewsradio.com. Search open season.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? Federal employees with WEPA Life Insurance will be receiving over $7 million in premium refunds this fall. Since 1996, WEPA has refunded over $65 million in premiums. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. That's WAEPA.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
Fancy a plum job in President Obama's second term? I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, you can now shop for that deputy assistant position on your phone with a new app from the Government Printing Office. And forget China. The internet is the world's new superpower. It's time for a cybersecurity doctrine, says a new book by the Potomac Institute. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Dan Mintz and Jenny Mattingly, and we're up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week, according to Jenny Mattingly, is from the Federal Daily publication, Federal Employees Maintain Commitment in Face of Declining Morale. This is around the results of the Federal Employees Viewpoint Survey that we've covered to a great extent on this program. What did you see when you looked at those numbers relative to the job that you do every day working with people on the Hill and perceptions of federal employees and so forth?
Well, and that's why, you know, something we talk about all the time, and, you know, when we're talking to folks on the Hill, we keep saying eventually, you know, everything you're doing to federal employees in terms of talking about doing, you know, continuing pay freezes, changes to retirement contributions, regardless of the broader conversation of budgets and whatnot, it starts getting people. These are their jobs. This is their, you know, an individual person's livelihood. And so when you start talking about their pay and benefits, hits them, eventually you're going to see morale drop. And, you know, that just makes it more difficult, I guess, to, from, you know, some perspectives, to manage a workforce, to really encourage people to work towards the broadest and best sense of what their agency is trying to do. However, I don't think we've seen a drop necessarily in what federal employees are doing for their agencies and doing their job. And we are seeing, I think, at the end of careers, we're seeing more people leave federal service. You know, retirements are up over 24%, I believe. So it is starting for those people who can leave. That's where we're seeing some of this push down. And so I'm worried, you know, why this is possibly a problem is that eventually how many folks are getting closer to retirement are just going to say, eh, why stay?
I was surprised by the fact that some of these numbers didn't go down more dramatically than they did. I mean, I thought if you look at a lot of the numbers, the changes are 2%, 3%.
They're not
very
huge.
Few of
right.
them went even to the 5% realm, where I figured a lot of these numbers would look a lot worse than they did, Dan.
Yes, I'm going to take a little bit negative on both sides. On one hand, I think when I was in for the 3 years I was in, I think federal employees get a bum rap. Most of them, the vast majority, are dedicated, do a wonderful job, care deeply, and are really wonderful people. And they get a bum rap, and we've seen some of that already. But on the other hand, I also feel that they don't always realize how well they have it. When I worked for Sun Microsystems for 11 years, we were laying off toward the end 5 and 10,000 people at a time. They lost their jobs. You typically don't have that kind of human capital activity in the federal government, where you have to lay off the Department of Commerce or something like that. So I agree with you. I would say a reduction of 2% so that only 2/3 of the employees think that it's a good place to work is not bad. I'm not sure how many private companies would be unhappy with that percentage.
Well, Ron Sanders, who was the chief human capital officer at ODNI when he left government, said there were some numbers in this that if this were the private sector, the chief human capital officers would get huge bonuses because of that level of success. And yet there were other numbers that would get them fired.
Well, one of the things I've done work with the Senior Executives Association, and they did a survey, 2009, I believe, to GS-13s and 14s talking about their perceptions of going into the senior executive service. And the number one reason, or one of the reasons, was this commitment to the mission of their agency. It was this idea that I can, do something for the American public, that I can do this really fantastic job. So I think that's where you see some of the satisfaction, because people who are working in a lot of these agencies really feel tied to, veterans affairs. They're helping our returning veterans. Maybe they're in the intelligence community and they're making a difference in the war on terror. So there is this difference in some respects to some private sector companies where federal employees have a different mission and really feel that that's part of a broader picture that they're working toward.
One of the numbers that I thought was really telling in this that was not worse than I expected was the leadership rankings. And federal employees, I think the number was in the mid-50s for whether I think that the leadership at my agency understands the mission, all those kinds of things. That's really unfortunate.
And the question that we've always wondered about leadership is, who is that talking about? Is it political leaders who come in and out and, maybe are only there for 18 months? Is it the career leadership? I think a lot of that gets lumped in. And so it's hard then to say, well, how do we address this? And so it's a question, if they're looking at leadership, maybe they've got an agency where folks have left because we were coming up on a transition, whatever the reason may be, it makes it difficult to really parse that and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would attribute at least some of that to the fact that most government departments, at least, are just conglomerations. So there is no strategic – I mean, there is a strategic plan because you're obligated by regulation to do one. But there really isn't a strategic plan in the classical sense or in the private sector sense. So it would be reasonable that no one understands it because it really doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. The idea of this, the quantity of people was another thing about this that jumped out at me. 687,000 employees responded to this. Their goal this year was to hit every single federal employee for the first time. I mean, the good news is the numbers that you get back with that kind of response, you can pretty much take to the bank. I mean, how many polls did we see during the election cycle where it was based on 1,000 people or 500 people, and this is 687,000 people.
Which I think is good, because before the EBS was, for a long time, it was every other year. It was a smaller sample, and so it was hard to tell how. And I think OPM is also starting to drill lower down into subcomponents and departments as well, so that some of this, we talked about metrics in the last article. You need metrics to guide where you're going to go with this, or at least help you figure out what's next.
Yeah, I would say, again, if from a leadership point of view, since I was a political appointee, I'll say that I think that one of the key issues is to try and make sure that everybody understands their relationship to their part of the mission of the department, because one of the great things when it happens is the sense of mission and helping the public good. So it's important that people understand how what their work does relates to that mission. That's not always done.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Jenny Mattingly's from Federal Daily. The headline is Federal Employees Maintain Commitment in Face of Declining Morale, and you can read it and find the link to the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey and our coverage of it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Dan Mintz's choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to transform how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show When Crowd Meets Cloud, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
with the what I call the legacy method, you're only going to be able to get access to the expertise of the winning contractor. Well, as it turns out, you know, two other contractors might have had better expertise available, but due to cost reasons or their management processes or whatever, they didn't have the winning bid. With the crowd, you have the potential to tap into any and all resources who want to subscribe to that particular job. But you still have to manage that situation, but you use the cloud to do that.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why their vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. And new for 2013, standard photochromic lenses that provide 100% UV protection from the sun's damaging rays will be covered at no additional cost. The FedVIP open season period for federal employees and retirees is November 12th through December 10th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about their benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision on the web at myuhcvision.com/FedVIP. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare Vision this open season.
From cyber attacks to natural disasters, our national security faces serious threats. And dangers to our cyber and physical infrastructure require a coordinated approach to keep them secure. But are federal agencies strategically aligned to protect its citizens and their mission? Tune in to Fed Central and hear insights from DHS executives Thursday, December 6th and 20th at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Parents, kids, and bullying. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers say that how parents and kids get along at home can influence whether the child will be a bully outside the home. At the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, Rashmi Shetgiri looked at national survey data from 2007 on about 45,000 young people. Shetgiri says that children were more likely to be bullies if their parents had said they felt angry with their kid, felt that their kid bothers them a lot, and felt that the child is harder to care for than other children. So she says,
parents can try to recognize when they're reacting in an angry or irritable way with their children, as this may influence how their children behave towards others.
The study in the American Journal of Public Health was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week, my experts counting down the most important federal news stories of the week are Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth and Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting. And the second most important story is chosen by Dan Mintz is from the E-Ring at foreignpolicy.com. The headline is Pentagon Budget Planners Left Waiting on the White House. And as you read into this story, Dan, it's not just the Pentagon. I mean, it sounds like this is what should apply to every agency. It's people wondering why the agencies aren't doing something about sequestration, preparing for it. It's not really up to them, is it?
No. They need to get direction from OMB. as to what the priorities should be and how they should move money. I mean, the challenge here was that the original agreement for sequestration, and of course we have to have at least one article about sequestration every week.
Of course.
For one thing, so we can practice saying sequestration. And the original thought was this would never happen. And there's still a lot of people saying, well, it still won't really happen, though I'm more of a cynic, so I wouldn't be surprised.
That's hard for me to believe in anybody that knows you that you're a cynic. Jenny, the way this – I had somebody explain this to me this morning, and I thought this made a lot of sense. I want to know what you think about this. Is the Pentagon is in a situation where they're trying to – as this article says, there's no appropriated FY13 budget, so they're working off the CR. They're trying to produce 14 without a baseline for 13. And then the cuts that may or may not happen because of sequestration can't be factored into whatever they're trying to figure out for 13. Here's the way it was presented to me to try to help people understand it. The Mattingly family budget. You're trying to prioritize each budget line, so you go to groceries. How far down that thread do you go if you're the Pentagon? Do you take it down to, say, fruits, or do you take it down the next level to how much we spend on apples and bananas? And I mean, does that make sense? Does that?
It does, and I think, but that's the problem. I don't think anybody quite knows how far down they should be budgeting, looking, or even how far down the line, because it's really hard if you take the family idea. If you don't know how much money you're getting in the door from your paycheck, it's like you've got this mysterious paycheck that's not coming in. How on earth do you know what you're supposed to spend that month on money? So that's what, in some respects, these guys are working under. I mean, there are some broad ideas. They do have a continuing resolution, so they do know some of the levels, but without knowing sequestration either, because that could may or may not happen. I'm kind of a cynic as well at this point, but, you know, or at least they're going to take us up to a nail biter on what's going to happen. You know, it makes it really tough to figure out where you go next. And I just don't know how agencies are going to do this. And, you know, my thing has always been, does it take more time, more inefficient for them to sit here and have to guesstimate on what they're doing? And how, when Congress is banging the gavel about we need to be more efficient, we need to cut money, here are agencies not being able to do that. And part of that is because of some of the stuff going on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, and if nothing else, it's happening, even if it is, as this article talks about, OMB, they're waiting on guidance from OMB. It's not their fault. It's the agencies themselves are not the one. They can't create these numbers out of whole cloth.
Right. They have to wait for some sort of guidance. And the White House and OMB have been clear for months that they're not going to give that guidance out because they don't want people to. You know, people have said, why don't the agencies figure out what workforce cuts they'd make or what programs they'd cut? Well, what if you say that? You cause some panic and then it doesn't happen, or maybe it's worse than what they said. And people start, you know, yelling about that and pointing fingers about that. So I don't blame the White House for wanting some quiet on talking about what's going to happen next.
Dan, one of the things that Jenny mentioned that I think is a really interesting point, and I covered it a little bit during the last round of potential shutdown. When all that uproar was happening, is nobody has ever looked, to my knowledge, at what agencies have to spend trying to figure out things that wind up never happening. I'm not sure how you start to do that, but I imagine our friends at the GAO probably could come up with a good strategy to do it if someone asked them to.
Yeah, The challenge you have is there's all these incremental costs that aren't captured. The CR process causes a lot of inefficiencies. When I was at DOT, we had a CR for 1 year, which was at that time unusual. It was inefficient because you never knew when and if they'd pass a budget, and you'd never know what that budget would be. And so they were portioning out money month by month, and it made it very difficult. But how to measure that is very difficult. Again, in a private company, when you say you're going to save money or spend money, the money goes up or it goes down. But in this case, the budget stays the same. at the end. So things don't happen, and that's very hard to capture.
Now, the strategy that I have been hearing more about is the idea that agencies, once they know a number, will be able to do reprogramming as they would do any other time to be able to move the boxes around underneath the top line. But that requires a top line to be able to do that.
So what we've already mentioned, in fact, is part of the problem. Everybody's looking to blame the other side for something. So you don't want to put your cards on the table. And it seems that's how we negotiate today, at least in public. So any plan that's done now would allow the other side to criticize it and say, well, you know, either say, yeah, that's okay, or you're doing the wrong thing. So the problem we have here is that people are going to push off until it happens, assuming it happens. I don't think you're going to see any public planning for any of this until the last minute.
And I think that's for the reason that you're talking about, Jenny, which is if you say you're going to do something, people freak out, because inevitably somebody will freak out about whatever cuts happen.
Well, and look at that last story when we were talking about the GSA. They said they were going to save $24 million, then they said $6 million, and now they're getting called on it.
Mm-hmm.
So why?
Even though they saved $6 million.
Right. So why put any of that out there from an agency perspective? And mm-hmm. You've got folks on the Hill who don't even want to, you know, the GOP doesn't want to put their cards on the table. The Democrats don't want to put theirs. The White House doesn't want to put theirs. So everybody's talking around. I'm sure there are some non-public discussions going on. But what we're seeing is nobody wants to take the first shot.
And the lesson the message I take from all this is sequestration is the thing that everyone's talking about. But it's, in my opinion, is actually not the issue. The real issue is the broader budget problem. Even if sequestration is fixed, it's not going to fix the budget process and how we do that. And that's really what needs attention and doesn't get the attention it has to have.
Well, and it's not going to fix the deficit issue. Mm-hmm. And if you don't fix the deficit issue, then you're still quite a few trillion dollars away from fixing the debt issue, which a lot of people say is the big problem that's holding back the economy. So all of these things are kind of stacked on each other. And you well know, Jenny, I'm doing this every single day on the Hill. I mean, they're backed up. Their calendar is backed up that they could work nonstop for a year and not catch up on all of the things that they're behind on, especially if you throw in the peripheral things that are not fiscal cliff oriented, like the farm bill and cybersecurity legislation, all these other things.
Well, that's the thing. And I think everybody's talking about fiscal cliff, but there are so many other pieces. And every time something like cybersecurity is passed or farm bill, it also has money attached to it. Mm-hmm. It's got rules and regulations of what agencies have to do, which take time away from other things. And so each of those does in minor ways impact these bigger issues too.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Dan Mintz, is from Foreign Policy. The headline is Pentagon Budget Planners Left Waiting on the White House. You can read it and all of our stories on Federal News Radio's federalnewsradio.com/in-depth this afternoon. The most important federal news story of the week, selected by Jenny Mattingly and also by Dan Mintz, next on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Hey, federal employees, choose the plan we believe is altogether better for your health. Kaiser Permanente. Get the inside story on better care. Join a Kaiser Permanente physician for a complimentary Fed webinar scheduled most Wednesdays through December 5th. Go to kp.org/midatlantic to register for a webinar on Kaiser Permanente federal benefits. That's kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Inc., 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
From Hurricane Katrina to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the role of the National Guard has evolved greatly over the past decade. Federal News Radio takes you behind the scenes of a new D.C. gallery dedicated to telling the Guard's story, the only force with two missions, fighting wars overseas and protecting the homeland. Hear firsthand from those who served and see photos of the Guard in action. Plus, find out how you can visit the gallery. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com. Search National Guard.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Pennsylvania Republican Todd Platts.
We want every federal employee to know that if they see wrongdoing, if they see waste of taxpayer funds or abuse of those funds, they should come forward, do the right thing, report that misconduct, and know that they're going to be protected in doing so, that they're not going to be subject to retribution, that their careers are not going to be harmed for doing the right thing. In fact, their careers should be advanced.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week selected by Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth and by Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting. And we are up to on the countdown.
Number one.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Jenny Mattingly, is from the Federal Times. The headline is Gang of Six Won't Release Deficit Reduction Plan. And I'm... As I read this, Jenny, this is referring to the group of six senators, three Republicans, three Democrats, that are developing their own plans. It's kind of a super committee style thing, and they're going to introduce this at some point, or one would hope. But I was reminded of my experience selling my car last weekend, okay? I had the price listed, meet the guy who eventually bought the car. And so we're standing there, and he likes the car, and I want to sell it. And neither one of us would be the first person to say, well, I'll sell it to you for, or would you take, fill in the blank. And we just kind of talked about the weather, and we talked about him and me, and nobody actually got down to the business of selling the car. It took quite a dance till that happened. That's what I see happening here.
A little bit of that, but also the other issue is, and you know, I don't know what these guys are talking about in a private discussion, but how many times have we heard of the Gang of Six over the last couple of years here, and have plans been put forward by them, by the super committee, by everybody, and nobody takes it up? So I almost see this too as a, is it kind of a throw up your hands in disgust and say, well, we've talked about this already. It's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So why would we put something out there? Because we kind of already know what direction these guys are going in. And so part of me looks at this and says, wow, are we really, you know, the cynic side of me says these guys aren't going to get involved right now. Does that mean they think that they can't be helpful? Or, you know, flip side, do they think that, you know, Congress is somehow going to work something out and they're not necessary right now to that. Yeah. But I kind of, the cynic side of me says, you know, this is kind of one more of everybody going, I don't really want to talk details here, and let's not be part of this. And most of what I hear on the fiscal cliff is a lot of people are doubling down their money on that. Some maybe broad framework might be there, but Congress is really going to push it into next year and let's talk about this later and go home.
The first thought that I had on this, Dan, was kind of a riff on my car selling experience, which is the old negotiating saying, the first person to name a price loses. And that's at the heart of where I think the problem is the focus is on how much do we win and how much do we lose rather than how much do we fix. Am I off base on that, do you think?
No, I think that's you have a combination of it seems that, you know, they had a panel with some either former retiring senators, Trent Lott and Joe Lieberman, and I can't think of the third senator. And Trent Lott's comment was that Washington's lost interest in making a deal. And so you have this combination, and it's not clear that there are very many people who are very good at negotiating anymore. And the second thing is you have more and more ideological purity in the elected officials, which is means that it's less likely they'll find common ground, because the reality is the political leadership, in this case President Obama and the John Boehner and Mitch McConnell are going to and Reid are going to have to If they're going to come to an agreement, they're going to have to do at least something that a very significant percentage of their own supporters will not like. And it's not clear that people are willing to take that stance.
There's a point that I mentioned during the commercial break that I think is appropriate here. I went back and looked at the ads in 2010. This was over the summer, so it was before the closing ads for the election cycle that we just went through. But there wasn't one single person, no campaign ad that I could find for any candidates for Congress in 2010 that said, I'm going to go to Congress and I'm going to get things done by making deals with the other side of the aisle. It was all that purity that you're talking about. And it was both parties. It was all places on the ideological spectrum. And if that's the mindset that unless I get everything, I lose and I'm willing to lose on those terms, then I become less optimistic about trying to fix some of these really big things.
Although you do see headlines in the last week about, you know, this senator, this member of Congress says they're going to renege on the Club for Growth paper that they signed, the no new tax pledge. And so maybe there is, you know, and you're seeing a couple Democratic senators and others say, well, maybe we should talk about Medicare or Social Security or looking at those. So I think around the edges, maybe some of that collaboration, which, you know, sometimes is a dirty word for folks on the Hill about that. But I think there is some of that there. And as we get closer to, I just don't think the deadline's there. This is kind of the procrastinator's way of doing it is let's wait till that deadline is right there, till we're bumping up against December 21st or whenever people decide they want to get out of here. And then we'll talk.
There's another hard part of the negotiation issue here that I see, Dan, and that is that most negotiations are conducted purely as business. And it's hard for folks to separate out during negotiations the personal and emotional parts of those negotiations. And in this case, there are personal elements of it for probably, 320-some million people.
Yeah, I don't know if you're talking about the hockey negotiations or the budget negotiations.
I wouldn't say 320-some people for the hockey negotiations. It's somewhat smaller.
Yes. When negotiations are ultimately done in public, you know they're not going very well. And so when you have the president saying that he's going to have to go above Congress and go to the American people, and when you have the Republicans releasing the contents of the offers – it's not a good thing. Serious negotiations are done in a much quieter fashion.
And then you have folks like Senator Sessions from Alabama saying they should all be done in public and they should all be on C-SPAN. And I love C-SPAN. I used to work there, but I had to go the same place when I heard that you did. That's the worst possible thing that could happen, it seems to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the more we talk about it, it's sort of depressing. But I mean, there's a book written around 2008, 2009 called The Big Sort. And the premise of it, which is happening, is that people are moving to be with people they like. So you find that smaller and smaller numbers of congressional districts are becoming competitive or are even competitive for the presidential election. And it showed this year when you had only a small number of swing states, and they were the only ones who got presidential ads. With the internet allowing you to only get the news you want to hear, it really does increase this ideological separation.
The third most important federal news story of the week, number one, as chosen by Jenny Mattingly, is from Federal Times. The headline is Gang of Six Won't Release Deficit Reduction Plan. You can read it and all of our stories, including Dan Mintz's most important federal news story of the week, on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we'll cover Dan's most important story of the week to wrap up the Federal News Countdown next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Commuter Info Report brought to you by Commuter Connections.
Evolving technology has offered an increasing number of Washingtonians the ability to work from anywhere. But just who's most likely to telework? According to OPM's annual Status of Telework report, more male federal workers telework than females, 57-43%. The study also revealed that more than a third are between 50 and 59 years old. Telework has been shown to improve employee productivity and satisfaction while combating rush hour congestion. I'm Dave Dildine.
These days, keeping your money is harder than ever. Some folks are even going to extremes like freezing money in blocks of ice, storing it under mattresses, hiding it under the litter box. We'd like to suggest something different, something easier. Sign up to Rideshare and save on gas. It'll help you keep your money.
Commuter Connections provides free ride matching and commuter services in the Washington metropolitan region. Sign up at commuterconnections.org. That's commuterconnections.org or call 800-745-RIDE.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
In the last 6 months, big data has taken big leaps in the federal government with OMB's digital government strategy and OSTP's push for open data initiatives. But with a recent focus on big data policies, what technologies are being used to advance processes such as collection, storage, analysis, and dissemination? Join AFSIA Bethesda and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence on December 13th at the Bethesda North Marriott to hear. Register today at afsiabethesda.org/DEC breakfast.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week selected by Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth and by Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting. The headline on Dan Mintz's most important federal news story of the week is from the Hill newspaper. The headline, ISA looks to ban internet regulations. I guess I can understand what Congressman ISA wants to do. And I know that Chairman Issa's background is in the technology industry, but I think he might have a long road ahead of him trying to do that when the Senate's trying to work on a cybersecurity bill, and the House is too to some degree, and any number of different things.
Yeah, no, I have no idea how likely this is to pass or not pass. It was just really interesting to me because it's such a complicated. First of all, ISA is a very interesting guy because on one hand he does a lot of very ideological kinds of things, and yet he sponsors this bill that's pretty interesting. I mean, whether you agree or disagree, it's a pretty interesting bill. And he also, for example, has legislation proposed associated with redoing the authority of the CIO. So he's spending a lot of time with some very interesting topics. And in this case, the reason this is interesting to me is he also went online to Reddit, you know, which is one of the new in things. You go there and
I haven't figured that one out yet, by the way.
Yeah, and nor I. Oh, okay. I must admit, I've looked at it a little bit, but he went online there and got thousands of comments about that, and many of them negative because they were angry at him because he was in favor of the Patriot Act and some other kinds of things. But they sort of respected him for going online to get the comments, and he actually personally or his staff responded to a lot of the comments, and it caused had a lot of interesting reaction to that. Some of this ties back. There's a big fight going on, so this is sort of an end around. There's a big fight going around what's called net neutrality, to make sure everyone understands that everybody should have equal access through the service provider, so they shouldn't be able to discriminate. And then you have people like ISA and others who believe that putting regulations to cause net neutrality interfere with business. So you have this fight. So that argument's going on with the FCC. This bill, to some extent, is perceived as trying to get around that by preventing other agencies from regulating the internet for net neutrality.
The whole concept of all of this is interesting. I am glad you chose this story. I have to say, Jenny, my number one takeaway was, what does Congressman Issa gain other than PR by answering questions about the legislation on Reddit? Does anything like that ever register on the Hill?
I don't know so much on the Hill, but it gets it in the press. It gets it out there to the public, because I think you see a lot more people are taking their ideas out to the public, because then they can go back and say, but look, this is what the voters want, or this is what, you know, people have spoken. It gets some press about it. And so maybe gives a little legitimacy to where he's going with this, especially because Reddit was, a lot of it had to do with Reddit was used when they were doing that SOPA act earlier, the Stop Online Piracy. And I remember when it was really, you know, some of the internet, some of the big groups got involved that have a large internet presence. They got the public involved, and it changed the debate mm-hmm. on legislation. So I think there's this idea that maybe if I go out there and build enough presence, it'll back me up, you know. And this is also part of his Congressman Issa, but also the broader movement in Congress about this idea that all regulations are bad, that we shouldn't have anything. And maybe there are areas they shouldn't regulate, but I don't always know if going to the public to answer that question, it probably needs to be an actual in-depth debate on what deserves some regulation and what doesn't.
The White House is trying this with petitions, and we have this, and you mentioned the SOPA debate and all of that. I wonder if we will see more of this when it comes to potential legislation, and I wonder if it will be constructive or not for the process of trying to govern.
Well, they've been doing this for a while, because Congressman Cantor on his majority leader website has the UCUT.gov site, where they put up, it's almost, I call it the American Idol version of legislating, because you put up three proposals and the public gets to vote which one they like. And then Congressman Cantor or whoever's working with him on the legislation introduces it on the floor, whichever proposal each week. And so I think there is this direct democracy idea.
We have about a minute left, Dan.
And I think also this issue in general is not going to go away, because there's an international component. The United Nations and a lot of international other countries are unhappy with the U.S. dominating the regulation of the Internet. So you may find this as a defensive posture also, some kind of legislation. ISA may be positioning himself there.
That's a layer of it I hadn't thought of, but you're exactly right. A terrific Federal News Countdown again, guys. Thank you very much for doing it. Always good to see you, Dan. I'll see you at the arena next week for sure.
It's always a pleasure being here.
And Jenny, thank you again for coming in. And now you know, too, from our conversation off the air, you got to go see Lincoln at Dan's recommendation.
That's right.
Thank you both for being here. The stories that we counted down this week on the Federal News Countdown, including Dan Mintz's number one from the Hill newspaper, ISA looks to ban internet regulations, are all posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.